Hello, and welcome to the Apple Insider Podcast. I'm your host, Wesley Hilliard, and I'm joined once again by William Gallagher. We're sponsored this week by Backblaze and Fast Growing Trees. This week's subscriber-only Apple Insider Plus will cover Apple services, the ones we like and the ones that are just filler. How you doing over there, William?
Well, actually distraught, because as we record this last night, all of those, well, loads of those services, they went down. And actually, I didn't notice because I was asleep. Time zone and things. But it did make me think that I'm more Apple service dependent than I realized. So I'm concerned is how I am. How are you over there?
Fine. I find it funny, though, that we rely so heavily on these things that all it takes is an outage to realize that, you know, cloud sync and everything else just disappearing suddenly becomes a problem.
I remember when I first worked on magazines, I was in London, 120 of us working across four computer magazines. There was a massive power cut, and I was the only one who didn't even notice because I was reviewing a laptop at the time, and it just went over to battery power. I looked up, and everybody else was leaving. They were going home. They'd been taught, what about me? And I sat there lonely into the night until the battery died about 40 minutes later. Were the days. Battery life.
Very extensive. The fact that it stayed on at all is a miracle. Mm.
At the time I was impressed, but there we go.
I did see one person say, well, okay, Apple Music's down, so I'll go download Spotify. The App Store was also down, so I guess at that point you just go pull out a drawer of CDs and pray. I'm not sure.
CDs, yes.
Mm-hmm. Compact discs.
Thank you, yes. Mm-hmm. I remember the days when I knew what CD-ROM stood for, and it was of no use even then. Actually, it's one of those acronyms in computers that just doesn't explain anything. But I'm old enough to
Read-only memory. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. You see? You know already.
I remember going to the hardware store and buying a pack of blank CD-ROMs to copy things to, like, my illegally downloaded music from Napster. Yeah, those were the days.
Allegedly. Yeah, while you were researching something.
I 22 actually, years I ago, just, yeah.
Yeah, the statute of limitations or something is probably up. My ever so slightly increasingly tidy office, and I mean it's very slight, but it's getting there, on my windowsill I actually have two packs of CD-ROMs from who knows when, and they have become artifacts now. Oh, three. There's another one right behind it. Spindles. We used to get them in packs of 100. What in the world did I use those for? Let's find out. You've got time while I start find a CD-ROM player.
Shuffling through. Yes. It's like finding an old floppy disk or something. It's like, what could possibly be on
there? Yeah, I have a box of those I've carried from house to house, thinking one day I'll look back at whatever it was.
But as we reminisce about days gone by, let's look forward to the future as... Apple Car has been taken to the junkyard and destroyed, left alone, but like a phoenix rising from the ashes, there is a new team being reported, Apple Robotics. What do you think of when you hear Apple Robotics?
I think joke, really. I seriously wondered if it was April the 1st. I don't want IC3PO coming around.
It took much longer than it should have for me to realize when people were saying this article's 2 days late to notice that April Fool's Day was 2 days ago. And I was just like, what do you mean 2 days late? What are you talking about? But I think, yes, it feels jokey, but at the same time, it kind of makes sense as we get into. The Apple Robotics team actually was formed somewhere around 2019 during the development of Apple Car. It was a branch because of their development of safety OS and autonomous systems, which could transfer to robots. But we're not talking iRobot here. I think. What are you thinking, William? What kind of robot could Apple build?
When you say like that, and I've read patents that I realized were probably pointing that way. Now you've said it, I think of something like what's the thing? Those robot vacuum cleaners you can get that go around.
Right.
Well, apparently go around your house. They wouldn't work in mine. Small rooms, forever knocking at the door. Can I come in? Carpets everywhere, stairs. But something utility-like.
Well, that's, I've misspoken because iRobot can mean two different things depending on what generation you're from.
Right. The Isaac Asimov thing, I, comma, robot. Yes,
it could. It could be iRobot from Isaac Asimov, or it could be iRobot, the company that owns Roomba, that is the vacuum cleaner.
Oh, really?
What an unfortunate take up that trademark with such a silly thing as a vacuum cleaner company. Not doing great. I think they were purchased by Amazon or attempted to buy from it. Anyway, that's a whole different discussion. But yes, funny enough, two different things here. One is a potentially dangerous robot that needs three laws to prevent it from destroying humanity, or one that will destroy your dust bunnies under the table. I think neither is the case. Apple isn't going to build a vacuum cleaner.
No. But my mind, they could. I wish we hadn't thought of Isaac Asimov. My mind's gone off on one about those three laws and humanity and all that. And this is a guy who used to greet women by shaking them by the breast. So I really don't want to promote Isaac Asimov for it. So I back Zumba in this non-existent fight of the trademarks. But yes, Apple is going to do, if Apple does anything, it'll at least be a very nice looking vacuum cleaner. You've got to give them that.
A slight tangent. I never read Asimov, and I probably should read something, but I was watching Foundation and realized that, I had never made the connection before that Asimov's Foundation is the same guy who came up with the three laws of robotics, and funny enough, iRobot is a prequel to Foundation in some respects. So, tying it all back to Apple, of course, I think what we're looking at here, there's two possible paths brought up by this report from Mark Gurman at Bloomberg. One is, there's the team's working on both, so it's not like they're choosing one over the other. They're working on both, but neither have actually been greenlit as products. They're still in the R&D phase. One is a monitor arm that sits on your desk. It's a robotic monitor arm that holds your monitor in the air and does things for you. So maybe...
How lazy do you have to be that you can't reposition your own monitor once a year when you change seats or something?
This one just sounds awful. I really hope it doesn't happen because it would be expensive and very stupid. But the idea is, like Center Stage, the webcam on the monitor would be able to follow you physically by moving the monitor around. Yes.
Oh, that's like, you remember the ad for the iMac that was like a flower? A guy walks past a shop window, really famous actor in the UK, I can't remember his name, and the monitor turns to face some things. It sounds like that. So they've already done it kind of 20 years ago. Yeah.
One of the examples given was if someone nods in a video call, the monitor could also nod. That sounds very whimsical and silly to me.
Well, I like the whimsy, but only last night I was in a meeting and somebody was happened to be gesticulating in a certain way, and it fired off a thumbs up emoji. Fortunately, it wasn't inappropriate in the context, but we had just been talking about funerals and things. And can you imagine sitting there, my very great condolences, fireworks and things like that? Yeah, one has to be careful with these things. But so far, as robots go, it doesn't sound like it's spectacular use for them.
Well, there's robots are everywhere. People, I don't think, really think of them as robots, but it's very simple. If you put in a command to an electronic command to a piece of machinery and it moves, that is a robot. That is literally all you need to be a robot. Mechanical arms, giant lifts that move boxes, all these things are technically robots. So yes, a monitor arm could technically be a robot with some intelligence, I'm sure, but again, very silly. There's one other option that sounds much more compelling, much more sci-fi, and much more unrealistic that's never going to happen. And that is a robot companion that follows you around your home.
Oh, aren't there robot pets, for want of a better word? I have a feeling that there's some being developed for elderly people, particularly with dementia, that it's a constant companion for them. And I suppose, I was going to say, it doesn't need feeding or anything, but they need charging. Maybe they charge themselves like vacuum cleaners do. I feel like I've companions to animal we've heard before, but am I just making that up now, basically?
Well, Yeah. Do you remember circa 2000 Sony making a robot dog that reacted to music and danced around, and it cost an exorbitant amount of money, and every child wanted one, and no parent could afford it? Yes, that's what comes to mind when I hear robot pet. Of course, we've gotten much more sophisticated and much cheaper these days. I was researching this, and I found these little $200 companions that kind of dance around on your desktop, and if you have more than one of them, they act like Furbies and talk to each other. And there's one, the Furby. That is a monstrous, terrifying creature right there.
Okay, I've heard the word, but I don't... Well, maybe they're just not in the UK.
It's very American, I would say. I'm sure it was a global thing for a moment, but probably a moment you weren't paying attention, but it was definitely a very American yes. phenomenon. But look up Furby later and just note the terrifying blank soulless stares and their private language where they're cursing you out as they talk to each other and plan the destruction of humanity.
Okay, Wes, are you all right? Are you sure you're watching this?
No, Furbies are fun. I just think it's really funny. Go watch Mitchell versus the Machines where an AI goes rogue and there's an evil Furby moment in there and it's really funny. Anyway, that's a movie recommendation.
Is there anything you can actually think of that you would want a robot to do? I mean, I think failure of imagination on my part, but I'm in my office, I'm looking around. If they could tidy up for me, that'd be nice, but, you know.
That's the moonshot, I think. So right now, if Apple released a robot, because it's possible, there's these little robot companions. They have cameras, they have screens, they make faces. Some of them can be very cute. It would be no better than a mobile HomePod. It would just basically, you could give it commands and it would react, but you already have an Apple Watch on your arm, a phone in your pocket, a HomePod on your wall. How many things you need to tell? Just so happens you went in the garage where there's no HomePod, so I guess the robot there would be handy. Do you really need something to follow you around to give commands to? So I think it would go a step further. There are robots out there that are literally mobile webcams. This goes back to the smart monitor arm where the monitor arm would be on wheels and follow you around an office as you were on a call or something like that. Kind of like the Verizon virtual, I forget, it's like there's a very specific word for it, but it's virtual attendance robot, I guess, where you get to be in person and you're controlling it from home like a remote control car. But yes, like things like that exist. And Amazon even had one that no one bought with a little face on it and couldn't do anything because it just had a little place to put something. Like one of the PR images is there's a pack of M&Ms in the back of it. I'm like, I guess just in case you wanted a snack, it could follow you around. But a lot of these guys ultimately landed at service industry. So there's robots, not usually in America, but I've heard of foreign places, different restaurants experimenting with robots serving dishes by driving up on their little carts of human avoidance systems.
Yeah. There are cruise ships, apparently, where there are robots that will serve you cocktails mm-hmm. and things. And you have all these massive arms flying around fixing things with glass and ice cubes and everything. And it looks, on TV, it looks really dangerous. But, okay, so
and then there's robot delivery, and there's also robot security guards. All very cute and silly. Yeah. Again, Apple doesn't need to be in that space. But there is a moonshot goal, and... again, we'd have to overcome so many things for this to even be a possibility, and Apple would probably have to invest in an entire ecosystem of home products to make this even happen, but they would ultimately want this robot to be able to go off on its own. It wouldn't have to follow you necessarily. It would just be in your home, and it would be able to dust, clean, fold laundry, wash dishes, stuff like that. But I think in order for that to work, especially in the next decade, we'd have to redesign our homes around the robot rather than the robot adapting to our home. And you'd have to get a specific dishwasher that was compatible with this robot or a pet feeding dish that this robot could refill, right? So you'd have to design your entire home around that. And that sounds kind of Apple-y in its own way because Apple likes designing things that require an ecosystem, but I think this is a step too far. It's going to be a while before Apple does anything in robotics, I think.
There's a French term, isn't there, for a room that a live-in maid gets, other than very, very small. Chambre de bon. Robots would need their own little chambre de bon somewhere in the house for charging and putting their feet up, watching the TV a bit, relaxing, that kind of thing. Yeah, that's quite an investment for a household as well.
my mind immediately goes to, for both of these, funny enough, I wish I could have used the image of Fifth Element in Zog's office where he... Had you ever seen that movie, Fifth Element?
I think so. I just remember some woman basically wearing a elastoplast and falling through space into a car. Yes. That seemed to be... That's the film right there. So
That pretty much is the film. But it is actually one of my... it's probably my favorite movie of all time. I love Bruce Willis.
Well, I like Luc Besson stuff. Leon the Professional. Am I thinking of the same guy? I like that very much. Slightly disturbing, but... Nice. Okay.
Again, yes, watch, yes. very difficult subject matter, but no, the Fifth Element, amazing movie of its time, probably holds up today for sci-fi nerds. But again, slow moving, old movie, full of very campy jokes. Love it. Anyway, there is a bad guy who has an office, and he's giving this speech of, you know, in chaos, you get activity, right? Chaos creates life. So he breaks a glass on the floor, and all these little robots zoom out from a hole in the wall to clean up the glass on the floor and stuff like that. Really, really great. Anyway, Gary Oldman, good show, good movie. If you've never actually watched it, I believe you'd really actually enjoy it. I don't know. Maybe you're a Star Wars guy. I'm not sure.
Okay, how about this for just going slightly left field? We are going to be talking about services in Apple Insider Plus, but you're saying this to me. Yesterday, I was looking through my purchase history, because I think Apple has a new way of showing you purchase history of films and apps and things. And I'm scrolling through, and then I thought, there, in 2019, I bought a film called Your Sister's Sister, which is very not science fiction, very low-key, and superbly well done. And I thought, I want to watch that again. 5 years later, I'm going to watch that, and I can't. It's bought, it's paid for, it says so, but it is gone from my library. And there is nothing I can do to get it back short of buying it again. So, bah.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I think I've had that happen twice ever. Anchorman suddenly disappeared. The movie with Will Ferrell. It just randomly disappeared, and I had to repurchase it for like $8 on sale. And it was like, well, this is dumb, but whatever, it's $8. We're in the digital world.
I have all of the Mission Impossible films, because I really like the Mission Impossible films. But there's a version of it, a bundle, where there are some more extras. And I think I've got that bundle, but I have it in an older version, and I can't... I can't get the features that aren't in the bundle I didn't buy, fine, but I also can't buy the new bundle because it's telling me, well, you've already got that. So I've got to try to find a way to just buy each film separately and include for it. It was never this complicated in the old days, was it?
Well, we've gone from robots to iTunes, I think.
That's true. Yes.
Yeah, so would you buy an Apple robot? Just let's say it folds your laundry. Would you buy an Apple robot?
No, look at the way I dress. I don't fold laundry. I hate ironing. If it could iron, or even if it just had a better ironing sensor than my brain, because it is guaranteed if there is a mark on his shirt that, or blouse, or whatever, that didn't come out, you will find it while ironing, but only when you have ironed every other bit of the shirt. If it had a dot sensor, then maybe. But otherwise, no, I'm surprised to say I'm far more likely to buy an Apple car than I would an Apple robot. But, one imagines the robot will be cheaper than the car. Possibly.
We'll see.
I mean, this is Apple, so you never know. Would you, though? That's the question, then. More keen.
Again, it depends on what it is and what it does, but as long as it provides utility, I'm probably going to buy it. these things, it may seem like science fiction now, but there's more and more of these home robots appearing over time. They're getting more sophisticated, and I could see it as a place where technology will go. We're just not there yet. The division exists. It's a moonshot project. We're talking the next 10 years, not the next 5. So stay tuned. I'm sure rumors will start up at some point about an actual Apple robot. I don't know. We'll see what happens, and maybe it'll have bipedal legs and walk around. Who knows? We'll see what happens. But speaking of things from the future, let's go back to the past again. We have some anniversaries this week, past week. First off, Apple was founded on April Fool's Day. I think Steve Jobs just liked the irony of it. 48 years ago.
Oh, your maths is better than me. 1976. I was 11 back then. That's, yeah. Can I edit this bit out? I just revealed. Yeah.
Well, you were there. You got to see the signing of the Declaration of Independence and everything. So there you
right,
go.
Okay. The 76 is bit is right. The 17 is a bit rude. But, okay.
Plus or minus 200 years.
Actually, around that time here in Britain, it was ludicrously hot. I think more 77 than 76. But that time we had droughts, we had all sorts of things. I presume it was worldwide. And so there's Apple, are forming a company in the middle of temperatures we wouldn't see again until global warming.
It is funny to think. So he incorporated the company and just basically because he needed to be able to sell. My history is a little blurry here. I know he had the blue boxes before Apple, and then once they built the first Apple One computer, the one they built in their garage, they needed to incorporate in order to take investment money from that banker that invested them, correct? So they went and incorporated, and Steve Jobs, being the joker he was kind of this, you know, hippie guy, barefoot jeans, long hair at the time, went and incorporated on April Fool's Day, just on a whim, and now they are possibly the richest company on the planet. So fun. Yeah. I always find Apple's origin story just so fascinating. I know there's been like three theatrical productions around it, and yes. Pirates of Silicon Valley is still the best one, honestly. And you can't find it anywhere. It doesn't exist on the internet unless you pirate it. But you know why, William, why you can't watch Pirates of Silicon Valley off of iTunes? I know why.
Well, I know it'll be a rights issue, but I don't know specifically what. You say you do know.
It's a rights issue. Just like many made-for-TV shows, I believe it was made for a channel that no longer exists that was purchased by possibly CBS, and it just kind of got dropped to the bottom of a drawer somewhere. They had a special DVD release, so those do exist out there. If you go buy an FYE, you might find Pirates of Silicon Valley on a shelf. I should have bought it when I saw it one time, and I didn't even think about it. But yes, it's on YouTube. You know, people upload these things all the time to the internet. It's so old now, no one makes any money off of it. I feel like this one's kind of a victimless crime to go watch it on YouTube. But I'm not promoting piracy.
Victimless crime, pirates. No, because you're saying nobody's making money off it. You mean the original makers, the original writer, and stuff like that. But YouTube is making money off.
Oh, of course, advertising. But in any case, Pirates of Silicon Valley. Go watch it if you haven't. If you're listening to this podcast, I guarantee you it's right up your alley. It's one of the best depictions, even from an Apple standpoint. Yes, they didn't get everything right. Yes, some of the timeline's wrong. That's any movie. Sure. I think even Wozniak said, "Yeah, that's pretty much how it happened." And dramatic moments. I love how they vilify Bill Gates. He's such a like weenie of a nerd, and it's so fun. I love the movie. Anyway,
This is the one that Noah Wiley played Steve Jobs in it, isn't it? Because I remember, I think I may have seen the film back in the day, but I remember clearly Noah Wiley stepping out on stage at Macworld or WWDC, whatever, in the role of Steve Jobs. Because I remember not long ago hearing a story of him talking about how incredibly scared he was stepping out in front of that crowd.
Right.
In it. So that was a fun moment.
Well, they recreated the scene where they put, but with the movie characters, where they put Bill Gates above Steve Jobs on the set and had everyone boo him. I love that. Like the fact that he went to Macworld and filmed that scene is really cool.
Yes.
Again, nerd history here. That's the go-to. Of course, if you want something more modern, go watch the Michael Fassbender one. Don't watch the one with
the Aaron Sorkin one.
Ashton Kutcher. Don't watch that one.
All right, noted. Aaron Sorkin did a very clever thing of finding three incidents and making three acts out of them. So that chronologically rubbish.
Of course.
Brilliant lines.
Oh, and yeah, just, yeah, that movie is absolute nonsense from a historical point of view. Don't go into Sorkin's film with the three product releases and think, oh, this is going to be perfectly historically accurate. No, it's, there's people at every event that he got a cast of characters and said they're at all three of these events.
Yes.
Half of those people weren't even at most of those events. They just needed them there because they're characters in a movie. But he did write a play. It's a good execution of telling this fairy tale that we have. It's definitely an American fairy tale. If there's ever one of those things where you're like, you know, the whole American dream kind of thing. Apple definitely fits that bill, even though the American dream has since died and maybe died before then. Definitely a good retrospect looking back on Apple history. I always enjoy
the spirit.
He gets fired, he comes back, he saves the company. It's all so much fun. I just enjoy that story.
This episode is brought to you by Backblaze, the online backup service. Now, right now, and I mean right now, this moment, I have a Backblaze account which is constantly backing up my wife's MacBook Air and her 160 or so gigabytes of data, which actually doesn't change or add to very much, but it's there and it's important. And at the same time, and I mean exactly the same time, I also have a Backblaze account for myself, which is currently backing up my full to the brim 256 gigabyte Mac Mini and the 10 terabyte external drive I have plugged into that too. All for the same price. I bought a $99 per year account for my wife. I then bought another one for myself, and neither of us have to give backing up another thought. Whatever we do, whatever we create or write or save or modify, Backblaze keeps on securely copying it up online where we know we can get it back if there's a problem. My wife has never lost a file. And in something like at least 10 years of using Backblaze, I've only lost three or four documents, and I've got them all straight back because of Backblaze. Now, you can actually back up data across multiple machines, and if you're a bigger user than my wife or I, well, then there are enterprise features, there are whole deployment options, there's everything. But no matter what you're doing with it, what user you are, what business you're in, what Backblaze gives everyone is peace of mind. So not only do I know, for example, a document I wrote this morning that's really important to my business, I know it's, well, long since been securely backed up online for me, but I know it, I don't have to think about it. I haven't thought about backing up my data, not in this way, not for at least a decade. You know you need to back up your data. Well, now you know how. So go get the Backblaze fully featured, no risk, free trial at backblaze.com/appleinsider. Start protecting yourself and your data now. It is so easy with Backblaze, and you will be so glad if anything ever goes wrong. That's backblaze.com/appleinsider. And thank you to Backblaze for supporting the Apple Insider podcast.
But there's another anniversary this week, William. You want to tell me about it?
Oh, I know this one because I remember it so vividly. The iPad is, wait a minute, you're a maths guy, 2010. Oh, wait, William, even I can do that. That's 14 years ago, isn't it? Yes. It came out in the States about 6 months before it did here in the UK, but I was working for BBC Worldwide at the time, and they got one flown over for it. So I one of the earliest chances in the UK to see it. And I remember so clearly the room I sat in when it was handed over. And it seemed so shockingly small at first. And then within just a few moments, I realised I'd kind of forgotten the device and I was just reading the internet, and it felt so right. I bought one as soon as I could. It was a big thing.
Talk about,
I love iPads.
Yeah, talk about the arc of a human being. We were just discussing the hippie signing up for a company and 48 years ago, and iPad was the last product Steve Jobs ever revealed. He walks out on stage and reveals the iPad, sits in a recliner that they brought on stage, and talks about how you can just simply read the newspaper and consume content, as it was at the time, with the 30-pin connector and the thickness of a small phone book. Very fun presentation overall, the last we'll ever see from the man. And just, yeah, I think the iPad is great, of course. You guys all know I'm the iPad guy. Currently the Vision OS guy, I guess, but still very much the iPad guy. I'm excited for the new iPads, and Apple could have done something cool here and said, you know what, 14th anniversary, here's some iPads. Nope, didn't do it. We're still waiting for the new
14
ones.
14 isn't a killer anniversary. 15 or 20. Was there anything special about the iPad on the 10th anniversary, the way there was with the iPhone? I've suddenly blanked.
I feel like they did a little video. Yeah,
that was it.
They do videos. Yeah. We'll see.
I really admired Steve Jobs's writing in presentations, because if you watch, I wrote that feature, the anniversary feature, and if you watch the presentation, you see how really, really cleverly he sets up the expectation that the iPad is going to be great, and also that Apple is, of course, the company that mm-hmm. should do this. All these things about it can't be this, it must be that, and then, of course, it was all those things. It's just really exquisitely well built. And then, of course, he announced his name iPad, and at the, I know it sounds silly now, but everybody laughed at the time. I've forgotten her name. It's a journalist in the States, woman who wrote, referencing the fact that it sounds like the name of a tampon.
Right.
This great headline.
Max iPad.
Yeah, MaxiPads, yeah, of yeah. course, and things yeah. like that. She said something like, the iPad is not named for women, period. And I was
of course.
I wish I'd written that headline. Yes.
Yeah, a bunch of men in a room came up with that name. But so speaking of novel Apple history, are you aware of the iPads? I know you are, but can you tell me about the iPad's origin story? It didn't just pop up on 2010. Do you know where it started its life?
I know the claimed origin.
Of course.
That there was... I don't know if we know his name. I know it was a man, and I know it was a Microsoft engineer who used to keep bumping into Steve Jobs at all the best parties, apparently, and every one of them would go, Apple, you are finished. We've got a tablet coming out. Tablet this, tablet that. Mm-hmm. Steve Jobs allegedly walks into Apple, well, it wouldn't be Apple Park then, would it be? One infinite loop, and goes, right, rudest words you can think of, him, let's do it right. I feel that has a certain ring of possibility, but also
my
a bit of legend after the fact, maybe.
For sure. My headcanon's more simple. I like the idea of this guy just following Steve Jobs around and making fun of him. But my headcanon was that he was just at dinner, simply, and he overheard Microsoft engineers talking about this amazing concept. And it sounds a little bit more realistic because it was just a one-time occurrence, but it just got a bug in his head, and he said, you know what? We're going to do it better than them. But even more fascinating, that was in 2005. So he wanted to build the iPad before the iPhone was even conceptualized. And the project that spawned the iPhone was actually the iPad project, this giant multi-touch tablet that they were working on. He realized, no, this is actually an iPod. We need to do that first. And then the iPhone came out in 2007. And then they looked back and they said, you know what? That tablet idea was still worth exploring now that the iPhone is getting out there and showing promise. We have this multi-touch operating system already. Why not blow it up to a bigger screen? And they brought back the iPad project. So the thing that created the iPhone that we all use and love was actually the iPad. And I know some of that might be a little bit, you know, legend headcanon-y, but I know that timeline is correct. I know that Apple did start with the iPad concept and then work their way to an iPhone and then back to an iPad.
It was quite a leap. I mean, I can admire Apple or any company that did this. An iPad actually doesn't feel too out of the park for them. They were building computers. This is another computer. Mm-hmm. But a phone was entering a whole other world. And, I mean, they stormed the gates for it and did amazingly well. But the chance of that happening for it. I'm really surprised that they didn't think, well, we'll just do what we can and make an iPad and that's it. But no, it's like, this is it, iPhone. And good on them, it worked. So, yes. Although that did lead to the fact that everybody thought, well, the iPads just look a big iPhone.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the same company that decided to enter the music industry after making desktop computers.
That's true. That's
and now, now they make films. So I leave nothing, you know, unchecked for Apple. I feel like if they can conceive it, they'll enter the product category. All right. I think we've waxed poetic long enough about Apple and its history. I hope everyone enjoyed that tidbit. I know me as a listener, primarily. I started listening to Apple Insider in 2014.
Was even born. Yes, yes.
2014. Yeah. So I know that I always enjoy those segments because there's always a first time for someone hearing that information and going out and seeking it out for themselves. There's a first time for everyone to hear that. A fun Marilyn Manism that he stole from someone else, but I'll steal from him, and so on and so forth, is every day someone is born who hasn't seen the Flintstones. Keep that in mind. Just because you know about something doesn't mean someone else doesn't. So maybe that might have been boring for some of you recapping history you already know about, but I guarantee you that at least some of our listeners had no idea, and now they're going to go look into it and learn something new.
we mentioned that I wrote the iPad feature. When I was assigned that, it was so easy. I know this, write it down. But you check a fact, and you check another fact. Mm-hmm. And I watched loads of videos. I rewatched the whole presentation. And so much was, and I, this is all stuff I knew, and I relished doing it because it was just such an interesting topic and such a bold time. Oh, actually, I've got to say this because I adored the moment hours before the iPad came out when everybody still believed it was going to be called the iSlate. Because mm-hmm. it's a video of who was the head of Microsoft saying? Steve Ballmer. Steve Ballmer on stage somewhere hours before the iPad came out, introducing all these great new Slate computers. This is a Slate computer, over and over, every time the word Slate. And then Apple called it something else. And I don't know that any of those projects ever launched and stuff, but the desperation to get in before Apple, just on the word. I think that was Apple back then.
Well, and you're
tiny.
In your story, you had an image of a billboard of a tablet computer saying, you bought too soon, or whatever.
BlackBerry.
Yeah.
Should have waited, it said, yes.
And I'm pretty sure BlackBerry went bankrupt within about 6 months of that billboard existing. But
yes, disastrous launch for them. They should have waited. And everybody knew. When you saw that billboard, you thought, ooh.
It's Apple.
Somebody, yeah.
If any time, keep this in mind, and I know this is, it's old hat by now, but again, keep this in mind. If a competitor is ever directly referencing another competitor, it's out of desperation and fear, not out of triumphant results. Note how Apple never, rarely mentions other competitors, unless it's in a partnership perspective. But Samsung aping Apple users all those years in advertisements was for a reason. And Apple has come for their lunch since. And so now we know why they were so afraid. Apple kind of took over the Korean market, their home base. And so, like, it's clear that there's something to be feared from the Apple company. So
you just reminded me, you saying that about partnership things. You remember Steve Jobs hawking the Motorola Razr? I think that's how you pronounce it, R-A-Z-R.
Right.
With such obvious disdain.
Oh, he hated it. It's like holding it by, holding something nasty by the tips of his fingers, pinching his nose.
100 whole songs.
But we do need to move on.
I'm sorry, yes. This episode is brought to you by Fast Growing Trees. Did you know Fast Growing Trees? It is the biggest online nursery in the US with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers all in the States. Actually, if Fast Growing Trees was also in the UK where I am, well, there'd be 2 million and one happy customers at least, because but you don't need to know this, do you? But our garden clearing project is continuing. You really don't need to know the detail, but our sheds are finally gone, and I have a need to explain to you why I'm studying the Fast Growing Trees online catalogue when, as it happens, I can't order them here in England. I'm studying it because 10,000 different plants, I mean, indoor ones, outdoor ones, ones suitable for every climate, possibly even ones as wet as England is today. Just looking through the options on the Fast Growing Trees website, it's giving me ideas for how to best use this extra space that we've now got in our garden. Now, you don't have my garden, but you can get inspiration and then you can go further in the States. Assuming you can manage to choose from all of those 10,000 plants, you could then place an order online. And once you do, those plants, they are shipped direct to your door within 1 to 2 days. Plus, you get the 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee and free plant consultation forever. Alive and Thrive. I am such a sucker for a good title. Anyway, this spring, Fast Growing Trees, it has the best deals online. Up to half off on select plants and other deals too. And actually, speaking of other deals, listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code AppleInsider at checkout. So that's whatever other savings there are, that's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code AppleInsider at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code AppleInsider. The offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply, but go rush to fastgrowingtrees.com. And thank you to Fast Growing Trees for supporting the Apple Insider podcast.
Apple Vision Pro. Yes, we're talking about it again. There's a couple of things this week, small details, but we can dive in. First of all, we got our first new immersive video after 2 months.
Yeah.
It's not a movie. It's not even a TV show. It's barely even a trailer. It's MLS Champions Cup or whatever.
You know, I know people who suffer from MLS, and it's it's a very wasting. I've got the wrong thing there, haven't I?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the one that's on your back. No, this one is sports, the soccer team, the football per your parlance team, league anyway. Okay. Yeah. There was a cup held from like November to December, so 3-4 months ago, and Apple captured spatial footage of a lot of the things happening there, and it took them till a few days ago to release a full-length 5 minutes of spatial video promoting the cup that has been decided since December. So, yeah, it's fine. It's very sportsy. I watched it. It's of course, if you can take it for what it is, the entire time you're watching, you're like, wow, I cannot wait to watch a football game or a soccer game like this. This is going to be amazing. My goodness, the angles, the places you can be, the things you can see that you would never see from the stands, that you would never see on television. Wow. But man, was this a badly made trailer for spatial video.
Wow.
Yeah, because they shot it, they organized it like a sports trailer in two dimensions, not for spatial.
Right, I can promise you I've never even noticed a sports trailer. I mean, there's not a sporting film I've seen the trailer for, but... and you get two wrestlers or something.
Sure.
It's end of the world coming Saturday and that kind of stuff.
Again, maybe you don't have any reference points for this. Just think of, like, they're promoting a league or something on cable, and it's going to be quick cuts between people taking shots at goals and jumping things, and there's confetti everywhere, and there's a trophy, and people are kissing each other, and it's just cut. They made this trailer that way. You cannot make spatial content with cuts every 30 seconds.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so
interesting. Doesn't work.
That's frustrating then.
All right, so do you know
the science
behind why commercials usually cut within every 15 to 30 seconds?
No, but I do know that when films first came out, scenes would last for minutes, and over time they've come down to like half a second sometimes, because we've kind of become used to it. What's the science, though?
Oh, well, so it's an attention span. So if you want your commercial to succeed, people will get bored within about 15 to 30 seconds. Your commercial might be 30 seconds long, so your commercial needs to cut 2 to 5 times in that length of time to keep people focused.
There's a habit now. Every feature film trailer begins with a trailer for the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking the utter pointlessness of this, but I understand.
It's TikTok. Some people will only see the first 5 seconds of something before scrolling, so they're going to fit as much as they can in that 5 seconds. So they literally try to put the entire trailer in 5 seconds and then show the actual trailer for the people who stick around. It's very stupid. Anyway, I despise TikTok. Moving on. The thing I want everyone to do, I'm giving you homework, please, for the love of God, this is so amazing, go watch, I can't remember what it is, I think it's a Mission Impossible film or something, go find the clip online, just type in Tom Cruise jumping over a fence, and there's a scene in one of these movies, I don't know the exact search term, you will find it and you will know what it is when you find it, but it's all in all these action movies. You could probably find it with Liam Neeson, you can find it with a lot of these, but I just specifically remember Tom Cruise jumping over a fence because and what would take a human being about 8 seconds to do, it takes about 15 seconds, and that, no joke, there's 37 cuts of him jumping over this fence. Just like cut. He's every step is a cut, like different angle around the fence, and he's grabbing the fence, he's going over it, and it's just is the most dramatic, nonsensical thing. It's probably for Mission Impossible 3 or something, but anyway, just...
I mean, 3 is when there has that great run up the side of the Vatican wall and things.
Great movies,
and
just
then 4.
Actiony nonsense can be very actiony nonsense.
Hmm.
But I bring
I'm
this
really
all up.
I'm quite perturbed, actually, by this, because that means films created in spatial video have an immediate disadvantage for all the advantages there.
Well,
that's...
I'm getting to that. So there's a difference in the way that you view spatial content. You don't need those cuts. I'll go ahead and tell you now. You do not need those cuts. It is so much more entertaining to be able to be sitting in a space and being able to look around and take in everything as it's happening. Like in the Alicia Keys video, you can look around the room, and there are cuts in that. Every few minutes, you move around the room as she's walking around singing, and you get. And every time you move, there's more information to take in. There's more things around to look at. And a movie shot that way would be great. Now, an action film, I couldn't imagine Transformers being shot in spatial, just because Michael Bay loves moving the camera around, so I feel like that would make you nauseous. But something like, you know, a conversational film, I could see Kevin Smith making a film in spatial. It doesn't need to be particularly flashy and explosive. It just needs to be entertaining, and conversation can be entertaining, and being in a space and learning about an individual by looking around their living room can be entertaining in its own right. I know I'm describing the most boring movie on earth, but honestly...
No, I mean, I'm thinking of the Before trilogy. Richard Linklater and Julie Delpy writers for it. The slowness of that and the utter... I love those films for it. But
just imagine you're in a medieval... Imagine you're in a Knight's Tale, right? And you get to watch them do the jousting matches from the stands during that movie, right? I feel like spatial movies can be broken up in two ways. There can be 2D scenes where a bunch of action's happening, and then you get plopped into a scene for spatial. Maybe that might be disorienting. I don't know. I'm not a director. But... I think it works, but yes, you can't have that many cuts. When you're watching the soccer trailer that Apple released, as soon as you get, you're dropped into this space, you're behind the goal, and you're trying to look around. Oh, look, you can see the goalie's food and snacks and water bottle behind the stand, but you're looking at the goal and the floor and the people and their uniforms, and then suddenly there's a ball in the net and you're at the next scene. Oh, wait, I was supposed to be looking at someone kicking a ball into the net. There's no... direction. Okay. The camera, camera is being held by a professional crew in a movie, they tell you what to look at by focusing, by zooming in. But when you are the camera, you're not trained to focus on the action. You don't even know where the action is because you've just been jarred into this random action scene for 8 seconds, and you have 5 seconds to figure out what you're supposed to be looking at before you're jarred into the next one. It's maddening, and it doesn't work.
This feels a bit rich, given I haven't even seen a Vision Pro in person, but that sounds like pretty naff editing, because editing is not just here are 10 scenes close together. There is a follow-through, there's a rhythm. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're following a ball, then when it cuts, your eye's probably on the ball. There will be something else there to take you into the next bit of it. And it cuts are not just for the sake of it. Eddie Hamilton, who edited, he didn't edit Mission Impossible 3, but he did the last couple of them. I heard an interview with him talking about the time they would spend taking individual frames out of a scene to get the timing and the rhythm right, and to give you time to register something before they moved on to something else. Not being able to take a frame out because it won't work spatially, that's shocking to me. I'm very disappointed.
I feel like what happened here is... they got a lot of content, but only some of it was usable. And they kept shaving it down and shaving it down into something that was viewable, to the point where we only have 5 minutes worth of content. And it's all very it's all very quick. It all jumps very quickly. I don't think this is what Apple wanted when they promoted that they were going to make this. Sometimes things just don't work out.
Did they release it now because the next season or something is starting? Or it was ready?
No, it doesn't make any sense, honestly. If it was going to come out at all, it should have come out in January. It should have come out before the MLS season started. This date is completely random. It just feels like it's done, get it out there, I'm tired of looking at it, kind of.
Yeah, fair enough.
It is being promoted. If you put your Vision Pro on and go to Apple TV, it's there. I think someone's proud of it, not to, you know, tear down your work or whatever, but I do feel like it's not what they were expecting, and I think it's a learning experience. I think Apple now knows this is not how you do sports with spatial. But again, every scene I saw in that, I said, I want to be here for 15 minutes, not just 30 seconds. That's how I felt about the spatial sports viewing. I feel like if I could just be given a button that says switch camera, and I had five cameras spaced around a stadium while people play, and I could just switch on a whim, give me the control of a live game or even a pre-recorded game, just have all five recordings available. I know that would be a massive file, but let me switch between the views and see and take a seat where I want to sit and just watch the game and have the announcers spatially in my ears and hear the game recorded with a spatial microphone over the field and have it all just piped into me professionally in a way that makes sense for each seat that I take. And that would be awesome. But again, what do you do with that? Like, you'd have to augment reality. Where do you put the scorecards? Where do you put the information about the game? Can you look to your left and right and see a virtual stadium score, whatever, information next to you, right? Instead of just seeing the game, what information would you normally have as a spectator that isn't available to you in the seat because you can't turn around and see the scoreboard, right? What limitations are you going to have to overcome? And I think Apple ran into this with this ad that they made, and it's just a sign that we've got a long way to go before we see our first feature length spatial film, I believe.
But I for all the failings you say of it, it has got you very into the idea of it, so it has teased success.
It's technologically it's technologically impressive. It's amazing. I want to see sports in this medium. How they're going to do it is an impossible task. I have no idea how they're going to do it. The content that is available, the woman highlining, the baby rhinos being fed, the dinosaur documentary that was done fully in 3D with Jon Favreau directing, those guys are also spectacular, but those felt more like this was made by people who knew what spatial was versus the soccer thing being made by people who are used to making soccer things. And that's the biggest difference.
That's fascinating. You almost make me want to watch. Well, I wouldn't make it through a whole game, but I'd have a look at the 5 minutes. Well, the first few seconds of the 5 minutes. Well, no, I've talked myself out of it now. Okay.
So I think we've talked about sports and filming enough. We've talked about film a lot today, actually.
Yeah, I love that stuff. So sorry for leading you down that line.
No. It's the Apple.
Sports is a counter agent, isn't it, for me? So
that's
yeah.
Fair. I am very interested in seeing an animated feature. Because I know Jon Favreau's thing is, you know, animated, sure, in its own way. But I want to see a Pixar spatial film, right? I want to just step into Andy's room and watch the toys as they try to escape from a window or something, right? Like, I think there is compelling ways to do this. And I think that it just needs to get in the right creative hands and we'll see some amazing content. But this gets back to an earlier point that I made in my 1 month review. We're now 2 months in, so this is still relevant, and it's kind of making me concerned. But there is nothing on this platform that takes advantage of the technology right now. We're using iPad apps. we're watching 2D video made for televisions. Where is the content? And I understand it takes time. I do. But Apple, you've known Vision Pro has been coming for years. The public has known since last June. What did you do to evangelize this product, and why don't we have anything for it at launch? I understand the problem that there's only 12 people using it right now, but those 12 people should still get what they paid for, I think. Again, I'm not disappointed in the product. I'm happy that I bought it. I know takesies backsies, right? I love this thing. I wear it every day to use it for work, to compute, to entertain, but I still feel like Apple could do so much more to promote this product to make it more reasonable as a $3,500 purchase to the not nerd who's looking to buy something cool. And Apple just hasn't made that argument yet. Maybe they're waiting to. Maybe they're biding their time for WWDC. Maybe they know something I don't, and they're ready to blow this thing out of the water, and they just can't say anything yet. And we'll see.
When you say it like this, it makes you think of when radio started, it was really theater done just audibly, and then when television started, it was really radio with pictures. Over time, these platforms, for want of a better phrase, become their own thing. They find what they're good at, and well, I guess we're just at very early days,
right? I'm going to make a video game analogy. So I was very conscious of the PlayStation 2 to PS3 transition, and I think everyone was, because it was a very important power shift in what could be done in video games. But as much as we were promised when the PlayStation 3 launched, they did not deliver for about 4 years because the power was there, but people were making games on PlayStation 3 like they were making them for PlayStation 2. And that's how you end up with something like Grand Theft Auto 4 or God of War, where it kind of looks, it looks better than a PS2 game, but it still looks like a PS2 game until the end of the life of the platform. When the PS3 was going out and PS4 was coming in, that's when we got the best PlayStation 3 games. And because by that time, everyone had learned how to make PS3 games and had perfected the art just in time to throw it all away and start on PS4 production. But that seems to happen in cycles, and technology has always been that way. And Apple Vision Pro, I think, is a perfect allegory to that, because we're still making content like it's for an iPad. We're still making everything as if it's going to be on a 2D display, and we have to learn how to live in a 3D space. And Apple should be teaching us, but if they want their spatial computing platform to succeed, but I don't think they're doing enough, not yet anyway.
My sister bought a PS3, I think it was. No, she went to buy a PS3 and was talked into getting a PS2 by the salesman because, well, it was obviously cheaper, but also it's just as good. It's exactly the same. And she knew no better, so she went off and did it and then was very disappointed. I can't blame her for that. I think she bought a went to buy a PS5 and was talked into a PS4, and you would have thought then you should have learned by then. But is there not an argument that by the end of its life, that's when most people had? Just that the market was bigger, was big enough by the end of it, rather than just necessarily education for developers.
Yes, I think that's part of it. It's education. It's also market. You see it in video games all the time. The PS5 market right now, we're a few years in. We're only just now getting to the point where developers are no longer releasing PS4. Until now, we've seen dual releases on PS4 and PS5, which means they have to make the game boot on the old system and then add stuff to make it better for PS5 instead of building from the ground up for PS5. And there is a dramatic shift in what is capable when you build from the ground up for PS5. We saw games like Returnal a few years ago take advantage of PS5. It was built for the ground up for it, and it was beautiful, amazing. The particle effects were just nonsensical. And it was just leagues ahead of anything out at the time because, again, they went and built it just for PS5. And now we're seeing everyone do that, and it's much better for the gaming industry. And I can't wait for that Vision Pro moment where everything is being built for Vision Pro. When not everything, but at least there are things being built from the ground up for Vision Pro, not a companion to a Mac app. But one last thing on Vision Pro, and I have a last little tidbit before we close up the show. I did want to point out spatial personas have arrived. Have you seen these little ghostly things floating around the internet?
I've read Apple Insider's articles, and I've seen little videos that look a bit, well, not peculiar, but sort of half there, half not there. Mm-hmm. Somebody gesticulating, and then their arm appears and disappears.
Images,
I didn't know how natural it felt.
Image and video don't do it justice. You have to experience it. And I will say it is... it tricks your brain in a way that I was not expecting. It felt like I was in the room with that person.
Wow.
My social meter was being filled, right? Like, me and Andrew got on a call. We played Battleship right. for a while, which is the only game that... We tried to play chess, and it kept crashing, so I'm assuming Battleship's the only one that works right now. But you could peek around the board. Like, the board was in front of you. There was a wall between you, but you could peek around the board to see Andrew sitting there,
you
like...
You could cheat!
No, because
that's
if you
terrible
Andrew Andrew got up and walked around the board and the water was there, but you couldn't see my boats. So
okay, well, in that case, that's terrible in another way.
That's what I told him. I was like, wouldn't it be clever if you could turn on cheating and start throwing things at people? It was so you could high five each other. Like, it's spatially aware enough to know that like you're reaching out to each other. And when you're both viewing a video, I was showing him photos that I'd taken in 3D in the Photos app, and it was as if we were sitting on a couch looking at a window, and I could look to my right and see him sitting there and see how he was looking and reacting to what I was showing him. He walked over to his keyboard, and I saw him look down at the keyboard and his hands go up and do a typing motion while he was typing on the keyboard. Like, it's really strange, but it feels right. And I wonder if Apple's going to give us torsos and stuff soon, if we're going to stay Rayman characters forever. But
Wasn't there that giant thing of Mark Zuckerberg boasting about legs on an avatar? And okay.
Well done, those are also but... like Wii characters in a video
yes.
game.
Oh, good God, Wii. I'd forgotten. Yes.
Yeah, you create your Mii on the Wii, right?
Yes.
But see, this is more sophisticated than that. And I understand that what Mark's doing is completely different than Zuckerberg Meta. They're creating this metaverse thing where you're a video game character walking around and you can look around and see people and they have arms and legs. Great, you've rendered 3D legs. What Apple's doing is significantly different. It's very much so the uncanny valley side of video games. So again, video games work for these because it feels very much like the same transition. Video games back in the day, Nintendo 64 versus PlayStation 1. All right, let's do a throwback. Nintendo 64 games looked better. They were technically less complex, right? Mario 64 and games like it looked better than the much more advanced 64-bit giant games that required CDs to run because they wouldn't fit on cartridges because they were cartoony, because they did not try to reflect life. PlayStation tried to reflect life. There's a Resident Evil 1 game, right? The characters are little blocks. They tried really hard to make them realistic, and again, it's just comical how bad they looked. So you look at today, and Mark Zuckerberg is not trying to mimic life. He's trying to make cartoon characters, and that's great. Like, that's good for the medium. Apple, on the other hand, is doing what PlayStation is doing. It's trying to mimic life, and our personas are odd. They don't look exactly human, but they're getting there, and I can foresee a future where the paths cross, and it's good enough that I won't say we'll ever get to the point where we can say, oh, that's a human in my room, but it'll definitely be better. And I've heard someone talking about, what if we could, you know, have virtual clothes, you know, and this could open up an app store for dressing your personas and stuff like that. Like, all of this sounds really interesting, and I'm excited for it. But right now, the floating hands and head thing kind of works because you don't have to account for furniture. You're just kind of a figure in space, and that kind of works for the moment. Maybe that'll change, but I like how this the direction this is going. And Andrew and I had a blast just kind of toying around with this, and again, it really did feel like we were in a space with each other. When we were in Yosemite, his voice would echo off of the side of the mountain. When we were on the moon, the spatial audio didn't echo at all. His voice just came from where he was. And again, like, it just worked, and it was really smart. And this is, I feel like, it feels like this is what Apple wanted personas to be from the first step.
You had me when you said it felt right. That's the thing, I think, isn't it? Yes,
it felt natural. You look at them and you look them in the eye. You can see their facial expression. They're moving their mouth, their cheeks, their eyes. Again, it's not a perfect representation, but you can see how they're reacting, what they're saying, and you can see their face and look them in the eye, and that feels important to me.
Goodness,
I wish we had this during the pandemic, but.
Yes, yes.
I wanted one last quick topic here. I could spend probably a whole show on it. It's so fascinating to me. But I wonder if the listeners are familiar with something called The Browser Company. It's
Arc, yes.
Yes, app name for a company that makes a browser called Arc. I've seen it. It reminds me very much of Linux. It's the edge of the nerd space. A lot of people talk about it, but it feels like no one's using it. And I probably insulted a bunch of Linux and Arc users simultaneously. I'm sorry. But I've tried it. It's not my thing. I like the current paradigm of browsing in Safari. Sorry. I don't like Chrome or Firefox either. No. I actually quite enjoy tab groups and focus modes
tab
and all of that.
Are brilliant.
Yeah.
Yes.
The
love
fact,
tab groups.
The
yeah.
fact that focus modes change your profiles, perfect. But anyway, I can't take that to Arc right now. And again, Arc's not really doing that. They've done a lot of things to change how the web is represented, right? So up till now, they've been working as a browser, trying to change how search works, trying to change presentation of web pages, yada, yada, yada. Cool. But, and I was kind of on their side. It's like, oh yeah, let's change up the paradigm. Let's do this. But recently, they've had a shift. Oh. And you know where we're going. AI.
Oh, it's not AI. Right? Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. All right.
So... what do you know about Arc? You said you've installed it but never used it, right?
Yeah, I told you that. It is on, I presume it's on my office Mac because I'm talking to you through my MacBook Pro, and I just had a quick check and I haven't installed it on here. I remember installing it. I remember firing it up thinking it's a browser. and I will get back to it. I'd heard all sorts of good things, and it was really just not having the time to get around to it that stopped me. And now you kind of, well, that's not fair. Just AI isn't a bad word.
It's not a bad thing. I'll reiterate my stance. AI is fine. It's a tool when you use it correctly. It can get you images you'd never have had before, maybe, or it would find you information that you would spend hours searching for before. Sure, there's reasons to use it. I'm not against the concept. I just hate the moral and other issues. Ethical issues behind AI. There's a whole other conversation there. But yeah, AI by itself, not necessarily a bad thing. I just hate the name they gave it, and I wish the technology would focus on the tools and not the toys, right? But anyway,
so hang on. What can a browser do with AI?
Well, this is what I'm going to get to. The reason why this came under my radar is the browser company announced that they had hired Charlie Dietz away from Apple. This is one of two engineers that are, designers that worked at Apple for the Safari team. So now I guess they're down to one designer, whatever. I'm sure they can hire someone else. But Charlie Dietz was also credited with coming up with the idea that you swipe to reply in mail, right? So this guy's been around for a minute and very important to the coming up with historically sound ideas in design. And the browser company celebrated hiring them because they're saying our next chapter in ARC is going to rely heavily on design and we need good designers. And they hired a few other people that day, but this one was important to Apple. So I was like, what do you mean historically important? Aren't you just you're a web browser? You already look good. What are you doing? So I went and found it. They have an announcement video. It's 15 minutes long. It came out in February, and I could have made it 3 minutes long. Here it is. They announced that they've come up with a few new ideas, a app for iPhone that does quick AI-related search, a browser that browses for you with AI, and a new bookmarking system that relies on RSS. Okay, the entire video done. We finished it. But they spent 15 minutes announcing that. Most of that video was them making fun of the fact that they were making a video, just like, we don't want to be a tech company that makes announcement videos, and, I'm in a black room, let's cut away to the cameras behind me, and it's like, I give up, this is silly, why am I doing this? And it just felt so, like, they were just so up their own, smelling their own stuff, that they were just, they couldn't get enough of themselves, and maybe I'm taking it the wrong way.
By any chance, I'm picturing, should we say, college age men? That's the impression I'm getting.
I feel like it was a diverse cast, but they knew better. Hopefully, people know better these days. But anyway, maybe my take is wrong. Maybe I'm just cynical. Yeah. But anyway, the video, give or take the video, who cares? Everyone makes bad product videos. I'm not really worried about that. That doesn't say anything about the company. I just thought the video was just woo.
There's one thing I don't understand, Inspector. The first one, searches, you know, using AI. Okay, everybody's doing that. And the last one, bookmarks with RSS. Well, I do that anyway. The one in the middle, the browsing for you. That's, I can't quite.
So they're all part of the same tool, and I'm sure I'm butchering it. Go watch the 15 minute long video, I guess. But so the iPhone tool is a branch of the main browser tool that they're releasing for desktop. So they're all part of the same project. But the idea is they're building a browser that browses for you. You open a page and you're greeted with a text field and you say, this is what I'm doing right now. And then it does it for you and creates a brand new web page, its own HTML of content that it's grabbed from the internet. Here's a bunch of text about the subject, a bunch of images. And at the very bottom, you get a couple of source links. And
so I type in, I'm waiting for the kettle to boil, and it goes off and does that.
You say, I want to know everything about the iPhone 16. Well, first of all, anytime you type in a technology term, by the way, I'm not sure it's the AI, but their top source is CNET. Not good. We all know what's happening over at CNET. They're basically empty by now. Sorry, CNET. They were my go-to back in the day. Not to badmouth CNET. They're just gone. Like whatever company purchased them, they shifted completely to AI, and they've since failed. But that's a whole nother story. But they primarily pull from CNET, The Verge, Reddit, and another source based on what you search, and then they generate text from that and images, and here's everything you need to know about the iPhone 16. Great. But first of all, how do you know that's accurate? Did it hallucinate? You have the sources at the bottom, but how many people are actually going to click on that? And now you've removed the ability for anyone to make any money. And I understand that sucks. Yes, the internet is ad-driven, but we built the internet that way. Humanity got together and said, you know what sounds good? A free and open internet that's powered by ads. Not ideal when it's predatory, but it is a system that we all agreed that works. But here's ARK saying, they literally say, the CEO is apparently a really nice guy. You know, great. I'm not bad-mouthing him at all. It's just the company is coming out and saying, we're here to destroy the internet. We're here to literally upend everything about how it works, what it does. Oh, and also we don't make any money, so we could go away any day now. That's okay. Literally like they've come out and said this. Like I'm not. I wish I was making it up, but they said these are all projects. We love it. We love what we're doing here, but we have no way to make any money because it's not ad driven and no one's paying us for our products. So
right. So well, hello and goodbye, presumably, but. And now I don't know whether to bother try checking out their browser or not. I heard such good things. Well, a bit vague good things now I think about it.
I'm sure it's fine. I installed the iPhone app to play with it, and it does what it says on the tin. You type in a certain, like, first of all, you have to go into settings and change it from Google because it's defaults to Google. But if you change it to search for me or something, like browse for me is their search engine name, I guess. But if you change the default search engine to browse for me, it comes up with that search tab and it pulls in data, and it's very fine, I guess. And they swear they're a private company. They're not collecting your search terms and yada, yada. Who knows how they are even a company right now if they're not making any money. But I just find it interesting that they basically stepped out and said, we don't like how the internet is built today, so we're going to rebuild it in our image. And all of the information that we get is going to basically be stolen, like Robin Hood stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. And you no longer need to deal with the internet. You no longer need to deal with websites. Forget the humans that did all of this work. We're just going to put a robot on the job, poorly summarize it for you, and let you go on about your day because your precious time is limited and we're here to save you. And I just, that position just so dirty to me. I just feel like that's so antithetical to a free and open internet that it's meant to be a resource built by humans for humans. And now here we are barreling towards a future where everything is written by AI and searched by AI and served up by AI. It reminds me of the advertising. Bring long story short, and I'll let you speak. Reminds me of the advertising Google did a few years ago. I wonder if it's still an ad campaign or not, but where it said, let Google do it. You poor, miserable human. You can't do anything. Let Google do it for you. Search it up for us. Let them order food for you. No, it's a real ad campaign. Let us order food for you. Let us make calls for you. Let us answer the phone for you. Let us do all the menial tasks in your life because you're just so swamped and are so tired, and Google's here to save the day. It makes me feel the same about that, but they don't have billions of dollars in their pocket, so.
Well, I'll throw you a lifeline here. Mm-hmm. Although it hasn't happened yet, and you never know till the cameras are rolling, it's at least a good chance that net neutrality will be restored shortly.
Right.
So that's a good thing, isn't it?
Net neutrality is nice, and I'm glad it's coming back. That helps protect the consumer.
Yes. I thought that would lift you up a bit more than it has there, but okay.
Yeah, no, it just, I wonder if why these tech bros are so bent on destroying what we've built. Right. And I understand, again, I know where I'm coming from. I'm a writer on a website that makes money from you visiting the website. Okay. Right. But you have to think about it to the end though. If these products, if ARK somehow exists for years and everyone uses it and nobody uses Google anymore, nobody goes to websites anymore. They just have ARK grab information from the web and summarize it for them. And then none of us make any money anymore. All the companies close. Google goes bankrupt. I don't know. But take it to the end result. Where does the information coming from if no one can get paid to write it?
Yes.
The AI has to have a source. So the monetization problem that we have here, I'm not against these tools. I'm not against summarizing an article. That's all well and good. how do we ensure everyone gets paid who should get paid? That's the question here. And I don't think anyone has a good answer.
But I have a big question for you, though. I need to explain. As I talk to you, I'm in my office looking out over the, well, my back garden and seven other back gardens. And it goes back quite far, lots of nature. And unfortunately, as you said, that last thing you just said, a fly landed on the outside of my window, followed by another fly, which attacked it. And they are currently fighting across the web. And it is absolutely, oh, they've gone away now. But that was absolutely revolting.
Oh, there. Lord.
Oh, okay. Nature. Let's stick to technology. Put that nature out of my head. Yes. Okay, so, do what you like, but fix spiders for me, please. Yes, or flies, whatever they are.
Do you have a solution for us, William? How do we make money in an AI-driven internet?
Well, as long as you mean by AI Apple Insider, then I have a few thoughts. but other than that,
all right.
I do think good work will out in the end.
No, this is not me saying there's an existential threat to the internet. I don't think these tools are going to prevail because, again, it prevailing is its own self-destruction. It can't exist without content. Content can't be made without money. Right? It's all a snake eating its own tail. You can't do this and succeed because it literally can't succeed. There will be a path forward. I'm more interested in why do these people think taking the path that they're on right now, the self-destructive path that leads to everyone failing, why are they so bent on taking that path? We all go down together. Yeah, that's the thing I don't understand. But I think on that note, we can end the show.
On that cheery note, yes.
The web will prevail, I promise everyone.
Let's all go put the kettle on. That'll sort it out. Yes. Okay.
Of course.
Naturally.
So that's been the show. Everyone, you can go and find me on Mastodon. Comment on all the silly things I said in this episode. Send us an email. You can find my email at the top of every article I write. I will respond to Twitter, even though I'm not there. William, where can people find you on the internet?
By my kettle in the kitchen. Probably on my iPad, checking. Well, actually, it'd be email. I used to say Twitter and Mastodon and all these things, but you said email once, weeks and weeks ago, and I thought, that is actually what I like the most. And I've been getting some lovely emails in the last few days and things. So email, same as you, top of every article, click away. I will relish that. So, yes.
And don't forget, if you stick around, paid subscribers, there will be an Apple Insider Plus segment where we're going to discuss Apple services and the doom that we feel when it goes down. I think that's our show. Would like to again thank our sponsors, Backblaze and Fast Growing Trees. And I'll talk to everyone next week.